Okay, our next speaker is Brian Klofas from SRI International, speaking about a CubeSat communications update.
Hello, everybody. My name is Brian Klofas from SRI International, and I'm here to talk about high-speed radio options for CubeSats. So I'm the quasi-organizer of the CubeSat High-Speed Download Communications Group. Starting in 2009, we meet about once a year or so, kind of to discuss what's happening in the high-speed data communications world. Its aim is to provide high-speed options for NSF CubeSats, and we've kind of broadened the scope to include all small sats and CubeSats. The last meeting we held was at SmallSat last year in August of 2013. There's about 20 people. We talked about radio hardware only. In the previous meetings, we talked about licensing and other aspects. And I'm just going to kind of talk about a summary of this last meeting that we had at SmallSat. So there's been a bunch of flight-qualified high-speed radios that have flown recently. The L3 Cadet UHF on DICE that's been talked about many times here. The Emheiser that flew on Cinema, 1 megabit. FSK in the Space Research S-bands. ISIS also has a radio that flew on Delphi Next. The Inaflight SCR-100 flew on the SENSE mission. It's a 2.0 to 2.1 gigahertz radio up to 4.5 megabits. BPSK or QPSK, the SENSE mission has a lot of issues, but the radio is not one of them. So the radio works fine. There's also the Planet Labs radio, which Mike talked about earlier. And also, there's a bunch of high-speed radios in Japan. I don't speak Japanese, so I'm not exactly sure what's going on over there, but they've got several radios that flew on Hayato and KSAT-2, and they're always pushing the envelope there. A little bit more about the Planet Labs radio. They have a UHF telemetry channel based on the CC1110. It's up to 4800 baud. Duplex, and they have also a ranging feature in that. They're in the 401 megahertz space operations band. Their X-band primary downlink is up at 8.2 gigahertz. They purchased 66 megahertz worth of spectrum. They're using the DVB-S2 modulation scheme for a bit rate up to 120 megabits a second. I think they've tested up to about 40 megabits a second on orbit so far. Their transmitter's 3 watts of RF output power into the patch or a helical antenna. For the first four of their CubeSats, the Dove 1 through 4, they use experimental license. That's $60 to the FCC. For the cluster launch they just deployed from the ISS, Flock 1, they went out and got a real commercial license, Earth Exploration Satellite Service. And this is a little bit more expensive. This is meant for terrestrial broadcasters in GEO, kind of the DirecTV. So the initial filing fee was $450K. The annual fee is $150K. And the license is good for up to 15 years. The licensing time period was about 1 year, and they had a whole public comment period where the existing users of this spectrum, including Digital Globe, they came with objections thinking that Planet Labs was going to cause interference. But they worked out all the Planet Labs showed that they wouldn't cause any interference and worked out all the details. And so they got their license. There's also a $5 million bond, and that's basically to prevent spectrum squatting. And they get their money back in chunks when they complete PDR, when they complete CDR, and they have satellites flying, et cetera. Canopus Systems, also up in the Bay Area, they have a KA band transmitter up at 26.8 gigahertz, also in an Earth Exploration Satellite Service band. They're actually flying on this upcoming Dnepr launch. They have 2 6Us, and they use an experimental license for this upcoming launch. They have about 10 watts DC input for about half a watt RF transmit. They're also using the DVB-S2 modulation. There's a lot of rain fading and propagation issues up at this high frequency, so you really need the variable bit rate that DVB-S2 provides in order to close the link. As you can see on the rendering on the right side there, they have an integrated 25 dB horn antenna with an RF lens on the front, and this all fits in about a 1U form factor. And as I said before, they're flying on the upcoming Dnepr launch in the end of June. University of Michigan, Jamie Cutler, they're also working on a 3.4 gigahertz transmitter, up to 5 megabits per second QPSK with 1 watt of RF output. They actually have 128 megs of onboard storage, so you can slowly trickle data into the radio, and then when it comes over the ground station, do a massive downlink and just dump all the data down at one time. Their initial flights on Cadre, which I believe is manifested for the GRACE or Ultrasat missions early next year. JPL is also working on their IRIS radio. It's X-band up and down, 62.5 bits per second out to up to 256 kilobits per second BPSK. They have the input is 13 watts DC for about half a watt of RF output. It's designed for Inspire, which is an Earth Escape CubeSat launching end of 2015, 2016, whenever the launch happens. JPL runs the DSN, so they're using the DSN for their ground segment. They have full duplex communications out to 5 million kilometers, and they can do Doppler and ranging out to about 50 million kilometers, and that's limited by the DSN. So if they had an even bigger dish on the ground, they could go farther. And Courtney Duncan is going to talk about this later today. There's some other high-speed radios. The University of Colorado is working on one in collaboration with Goddard, Wallops, and Marshall, S-band up and X-band down, up to 10 megabits per second. And it's designed to talk with the Near Earth Network, which is another NASA network. 5 watts DC input for about 1 watt of transmit power. And they're hoping to prototype this radio this summer. The Astrojev Beryllium is also up to 2 megabits per second in S-bands. It flew on the Arduset 2 satellite, but Arduset 2 has not been heard from, so we're not sure what the problem is. Arduset 2 has another 400 megahertz transmitter, so it's probably not this radio. And they have another radio flying later this year. Kevin said he'd be here. I haven't seen him yet. If you want to talk with him. Also, Tethers Unlimited has a software-defined radio that I'm not sure when it's going to fly, but it spans a wide variety of frequencies. Also, to talk a little bit about the future AMSAT CubeSats, Plug Fox 1, it's to be launched on GRACE or Ultrasat beginning next year. Unfortunately, Tony Montero, AA2TX, passed away earlier this year. He was the lead engineer for Fox and also for AMSAT, the VP of Engineering for AMSAT. But the team picked up the slack, and we're still on target for a delivery of September or October this year for the GRACE or Ultrasat integration. It's an FM transponder, 70 centimeters up and 2 meters down, up to 800 milliwatts output power. It's got a couple experiments from Vanderbilt, Virginia Tech, and Penn State. And there's also some information about Fox 1B, which has been ALANA approved but not been manifested at all. And kind of in conclusion, there's various high-speed options for future CubeSat flights. Some of the teams that I mentioned in this talk have expressed interest in selling or giving away their design when they're open sourcing their design, so you can certainly talk with those teams if you're interested. And for the teams that don't have a lot of money to throw at this problem, there are lower cost options, including the AstroDev, where you can get a lot of data down. Thanks to Courtney, Mike, and Jamie for info. And also, I'm planning another CHCC meeting at SmallSat this year. If you're interested, come talk to me. That's all I had for 10 minutes, so I think we're maybe back on schedule. Thanks. Any questions? Yes? Has anyone tried Wi-Fi? Like, literally, is it running? I don't think so. I know that Cal Poly is working with was it Merritt Island High School? Yeah, and they're doing a Wi-Fi experiment. coming up. Yeah, so the question was about Iridium and Inmarsat. I know NASA and San Jose State have been doing some work with that. Iridium worked on, what was it, Tech EdSat and Tech EdSat 3. I don't have much information about that. They're very tight-lipped about what they're doing. So I'm not sure. I'd love to have more information. So that's if you want to have a commercial license. So Planet Labs was the first organization to actually go for a full commercial license. Everybody else has been using either amateur radio or experimental.
So
if you want to use the frequencies non-experimentally. So if you're selling data products. If you're using the spectrum in a non-experimental way, then you need to pay that. So it's kind of expensive. Yeah?
What's the power on the Planet Lab
experimental? It's 3 watts RF. I don't know how much input. Mike is here, though. You can ask all the questions you want of him. And I think, one last question. Yeah. I don't think they've gotten that fast. But you can talk with Mike about that, and I'm sure it'll answer your questions. So, all right, thanks, guys.
All right, thank you, everyone. We're a little bit back on schedule, but let's take a 10-minute break.